Welcome, everybody. It's time again for another episode of WVU Marketing Communications Today, brought to you from West Virginia University, a syndicated show at the intersection of data-driven decision-making and marketing practice. With our host today, the host who knows the most about this subject, Matthew Cummings. Hey, Matthew.
Hey, Paul. How are you?
Good. Do you really know the most? I took that for granted, but you know.
I don't. That's why we have a guest today.
Sounds good.
But I know the questions to ask, so we will certainly get to that. It's great to be hosting today's show. I want to thank all of you for taking the time out of your busy day to join us for another episode of WVU Marketing Communications Today from all of us here at West Virginia University. We certainly have a good show on tap this afternoon with a lot to talk about, and it's a topic that's relevant and definitely timely. From Facebook to autonomous vehicles, today we'll navigate the ethics surrounding data collection real time as new technologies and ways of collecting data are being invented as we speak this afternoon. You know they're working on it. We'll go beyond what data is collected to how it's collected, who collects it, and has access to it, and where it's stored. Our guest today is Rachel Post. Rachel is former VP of Branded Content at Guardian Labs US, the Guardian Media Group's content marketing studio in New York. Her team produced compelling content marketing campaigns for global brands, and you know, you may have heard of some of these: Microsoft, Cisco, GM, Nissan, Visa, Ben & Jerry's, Rainforest Alliance, and Amazon Studios, just to name a few. In fact, speaking of Amazon, the Guardian's How to Solve a Murder series for Amazon, which Rachel managed, received extensive press coverage and recognition as the first original series of investigative brand journalism. Formerly, Rachel was a business journalist in Silicon Valley and ran her own digital marketing firm in L.A. She's currently launching her second company based on her passion for entrepreneurism and emerging tech. She also has, she's also a colleague, having taught for WVU's Integrated Marketing Communications Program, and is a past recipient of the program's Alexia Venitez Teaching Award. How are you, Rachel?
Good. Thank you, Matthew.
So let's dig in, and with a topic like this today, I'm sure you could anticipate that I would start with Facebook. Considering Facebook and its state of follies in the news this month, and unfortunately probably for the foreseeable future, I want to get your take on some of the ethical issues that are coming to the forefront.
Sure. Well, it's a great place to start because it's in the news every single day, and I'm fascinated to watch this play out, to see, you know, Mark Zuckerberg, Zuck as they call him in the Valley, in Silicon Valley, in front of Congress, and you have two very different cultures. I'm reminded of, I first started doing some social media training in L.A. about 10 years ago, and I remember doing a workshop downtown L.A., and this old-school ad exec jumps up in the back of the room when I'm just getting started on my spiel about, you know, Facebook and social media and how great it is, and he interrupts me and he says, "Facebook is the devil!" And I had to take a moment, like, okay, I'm not sure how to handle this. And I think we're seeing some of that kind of pushback now with the hashtag delete Facebook movement and some of these other things that, you know, are coming up from, well, this data, compromised data, right? And Cambridge Analytica and 87 million users, that's a lot of people. So it's fascinating to see what's going on. And I remember reading this article in Quorum, and it talks about how our Congress these days is one of the oldest in history. Most of the average age of senators is 61, and a Washington Post article was talking about the grandpa questions that Mark Zuckerberg was facing in the hearing. So it's a really interesting time, and you know, it brings up all sorts of questions about how do we regulate something that's emerging and changing and just swallowing things up like Instagram, and it just left and right is gobbling things, and so Facebook itself does not stay the same, right? So by the time you create a regulation, are you even caught up with where Facebook was a year ago? You know, it may have changed by the time this could go through Congress. And so I think there's so many amazing things going on in this space right now.
Certainly. And as we're discussing this, we read in the news this week that Facebook is launching a new ad campaign across TV, cinema, out of home, transit, and of course on Facebook. The campaign is sort of reminiscent, going back to the old days. It starts out in this spot with the feeds full of those old friends and baby photos, and then talks about something happened, spam and clickbait and fake news and data misuse, all around just bringing people back and restoring that trust that we know is just so critical. We'll stay on the topic of ethics here for a bit and switch gears a bit. Another category generating data-related news is in the auto industry, specifically around autonomous vehicles, something obviously that we all rely on multiple times a day. So I'm interested in your take on self-driving cars and some of the concerns that are emerging in this area.
Sure, I think that's a really interesting question because, you know, it's kind of where does profits come in, right? And where does data sharing come in, and who controls the algorithms? And mm-hmm. it's also in the news, you know, with autonomous vehicles. There was the crash in Tempe, Arizona, where the first fatality with an Uber vehicle. And, you know, I was reading something about how they're saying there's silos within these companies between who controls the algorithms for one part of the vehicle may not talk to someone who has the algorithm for, let's say, the LiDAR versus the camera versus whatever. And wow. it becomes very interesting, like how, and then these different Waymo, Uber, for example, they're not sharing their intellectual property. So they're not, you know, open sourcing how they're doing autonomous vehicles. So people are doing it differently and there's like no standardization of the data. So I think it's just really interesting. And then you throw in, you're on the road, you throw in human behavior, right? Like, mm-hmm. it's hard enough as a driver to sometimes predict what the crazy person in front of you is going to do. Are they going to turn left? Are they going to zoom over here? And think about that. Like, there's something called the Pittsburgh left turn. So on the East Coast, you know, a lot of times, I know
it well. I do it myself.
You know what I'm talking about, right?
Absolutely do, yeah. And you know, I live in Pennsylvania, so I employ the Pittsburgh left all over the state.
So can you tell our audience what Pittsburgh left turn is?
So Pittsburgh left is the driving practice of the first left-turning vehicle taking precedence, I guess you could say, over the vehicles that are going straight through that intersection.
Yeah, so people just let the person turn left because it's really hard to make a left turn.
Right.
So there's courtesy amongst the drivers, right? But when you have Uber putting these vehicles on the road, they are not turning left like a normal driver would, right? Mm-hmm. So it confuses the whole intersection because they are following traffic laws only. So that's a sign to me of, you know, we have a ways to go with a autonomous vehicle, understanding how to interact. And then people, other drivers, are confused how to interact with a self-driving car, right? So that's like, to me, it's literally an intersection of data and human.
I see what you did there.
How does it work? Yeah, so pardon the pun. I have a few more for you. Just me.
So, you know, I remember thinking back just around this topic a few years ago and whether or not I would be willing to give up some of that control to a computer. But, you know, as you consider it, you really do that anytime you jump in a cab or order a Lyft or order an Uber. I mean, you are giving up that that control to another human. So, you know, I guess as consumers, our decision is, do we trust other humans or do we trust, you know, the machine to get us there safely?
Yeah, and I was thinking the other day, I was on an airport shuttle, and these shuttles, there's no human around, right? You can see out one end of the airport shuttle, right, and out the other end, there's nobody driving that shuttle.
It's scary sometimes, for sure.
Yeah, we are already in these transportation modes without anybody driving, so...
Yeah.
It's going to be really interesting to see what happens in the next few years. Yeah.
What are some of the topics, the hot topics around data collection, data integrity, and privacy right now? What do we need to know and be aware of?
Wow, there's just so much going on in this space. You know, I feel like it's like every day you read something new, and we're constantly learning, and I think it's exponential growth, you know, so it's a lot. So let's try to narrow it down a little bit. Some of it is really interesting is the privacy issues, right? And that's partly what's going on with Facebook. People are like, wait, you gave away my data? What? You gave away my information? So how the data is collected is really important. Who collects it and who has access to it and where is it stored? Like, is it stored in a safe location? Is it being sold to someone else? That are you being notified when your information, your name, your email, whatever, is being sold to someone else? And how is it being used? Like, I don't know if you downloaded your, now that this whole thing came out with Facebook, did you download your data? You can do that now on your Facebook page.
Yeah, I haven't yet.
It's very interesting. I actually did that recently, and I was looking through it just because we're talking about this today, and I was thinking, I want to know what Facebook thinks about me or what they've collected about me, right? And so I looked at their ad section. I downloaded all my data, and so Facebook thinks I'm really into computers, I'm into love, and I'm into vampires. And I was like, what? Vampires? Like,
it's a great mix.
I'm really not sure why Facebook thinks I like vampires. I have no idea. So there are some weird outliers in my data where I'm like, huh? What? Why is that? And then I looked at where Facebook claims that I liked, different things that I've liked over the years, right? Yeah. And there was this weird anomaly last July, I think it was, where it says I liked about 25 random gyms. Like fitness this or fitness that or gym this or gym that, all within a 2-week period. And I'm like, I don't even go to a gym. I'm certain I never like these things. Mm-hmm. And I like to bike outside. Like, I'm not a gym person. So I know for sure I did not like 25 gyms last July. So where is this coming from? You know, like how is my name and my likeness literally liking something? Sorry, I did it again.
Right.
But why is that? You know, there's a lot of these things related to how our information is being sold as well. Huge issue. And then I could go on. I mean, I could literally go on and on.
Please do. Sure.
So then I think it's also, you know, taking into consideration what we call in the industry personally identifiable information or sensitive personal information. So I love to use this example because it's really interesting and it's very timely. For example, let's say there's a gender question on a survey or poll for data that you're collecting, and if only, let's say, 5 people choose a transgender response, that can really narrow down their identity considerably. And so it becomes an ethical question. Like, if you use that information, that can really challenge the quote-unquote anonymity of the data that you're collecting, and how is that shared? And there's so many ethical and legal issues to all of this stuff. So I just think it's fascinating.
Yeah, it certainly is. This is a great topic, and we're going to actually take a quick break right now. We'll come back, and I want to talk a little bit more about your experience in this space at The Guardian, as well as some takeaways for marketers. So we'll be right back.
And we're just going to keep you a moment to remind you that, well, we all know this. Marketing is more than ads and press releases. It's about building relationships. And there is a place you can connect with other marketing professionals just like you. It's at West Virginia University's Integrate Conference coming up in Morgantown, West Virginia, August 1st through the 4th. You can network and learn from industry leaders. You can listen to speakers representing large and innovative organizations like Cisco and Facebook, as well as agencies like Cappuccino and Fujikado. Register today at integrate.wvu.edu. Don't miss it. The Integrate Conference in Morgantown, West Virginia, coming up the first week of August at West Virginia University. And we'd be remiss if we didn't also point out that West Virginia University's Online Data Marketing Communications Program, it's the first graduate program in the country to focus on data's impact on marketing communications. In it, you can learn innovative strategies from award-winning faculty, like those we bring each and every week, as you shape the future of marketing and figure out how you can take your company to the next level. Learn more at dmc.wvu.edu. That's a lot of letters. It starts with data, marketing, communications. dmc.wvu for West Virginia University.edu. Check it out, the Data Marketing Communications Program at West Virginia University. And back to a couple of people who know a thing or two about that program here, Matthew Cummings and his guest.
Certainly, and we've both been to that Integrate conference that you talked about too, Paul, and I have to say it's definitely a great conference and well worth the price. One of the most reasonable and valuable conferences you can attend. Rachel, I'm sure you'd agree with that.
Oh, yes, I had great times at Integrate. It's really fun to meet the students as well.
Yeah, no doubt. Again, you're listening to WVU Marketing Communications today, and our guest is Rachel Post. Rachel is former VP of Branded Content at Guardian Labs US, the Guardian Media Group's content marketing studio in New York. And I want to jump into your experience there. So how did you use data and analytics and analyze and get a better understanding of your audience at the Guardian?
Yeah, so I have to say that data is just so ingrained in everything, right? It's in all of the tools. So the Guardian had its own proprietary analytics software, and that allows you to see on a page. So let's say I open up an article page. I can see exactly where people are clicking in real time. I can see where they're scrolling, where we lose them, where they're coming from, where they're going afterwards. So let's say, for example, they're really liking we have a link to another story. They're really liking that story. A lot of readers are going directly from this article to that article. So then I can move it up and try to make that article bigger, like more predominant, to get maybe even more clicks and views. Or maybe I'll take that information and say, is it that space on the page that they're interested in? Or is it that article? Or is it that photo? So you switch out the photo. Ah, not the photo, it's the article. Switch out the... put in a different article. Is it the place on the page, right? So you can do a lot of fun, I would call it real-time analytics, where you're literally testing different hypotheses in the moment. And that is so, that's so awesome. I have to say it's really fun to play with, and you're learning how, you're directly learning how that data and taking the analysis and using it to work with your audience and figure out what they want, basically, and give them what they want.
And it's all about improving relevance at the end of the day, right?
Mm. Yes, absolutely. And making sure that you're meeting the needs of your audience, right? Because ultimately in media, that's what you want to do, is you want to reach your audience. And if something's not reaching your audience, if a photo isn't working or a headlight isn't working, you want to flip it. You want to try something new and adjust, right? So it's that real-time adjustment that I think is fascinating, and data gives us those tools.
Yeah, it's really exciting as marketers to think about that in a real-time sense. What did you learn at The Guardian, though, about FTC compliance and media industry best practices?
Yeah, so we're having some fun topics, right? Legal and FTC stuff. Compliance.
Data, data. Misuse, fake news. Yeah, we have it all today.
Algorithms. I would love to get a t-shirt that says I heart algorithm. So, yeah, I know, a little geeky. But I'll take you back to 2014 when I was just starting to do branded content for The Guardian. And branded content, now native advertising and advertorials have been around for a while, but, you know, sort of the rise of native advertising, what I like to call branded content, really just started taking off. There was fuel about, you know, 4 years ago or so, 4 or 5 years ago. So The Guardian was relatively new to the game, and it was a crazy time. I literally had our lawyer on speed dial on my phone. It was a constant conversation, like, oh my gosh, they just changed the FTC guidelines. How are we going to label our content? You know, how are we going to make sure that the reader understands that this is not a journalistic article, this is a sponsored article, and then what are we going to call it, and how are we going to write the legal disclaimers, and how are we going to work with our clients, these Fortune 500 companies, to make sure that we do the best job we can to get the information out there while still meeting the FTC guidelines, et cetera, et cetera. So the cool part about that, though, there was no precedent, right? And you can interpret the FTC guidelines, and we did absolutely everything we could to make sure it was labeled correctly. Like, this says this is sponsored content. You know, it's grayed out. It's got a logo on it of the company. It's got the information clearly set out. And my philosophy at The Guardian doing branded content was essentially, we will do excellent, high-quality content, and that will speak for itself. Mm-hmm. So that's what we did. And we actually really pushed that. I really wanted to push the envelope because my background is as a journalist. I'm not coming from an advertising background per se. I'm coming from a journalistic and marketing background. Sure. So I wanted to, when we were working with Amazon Studios for the Bosch series launch, and I'm a huge Michael Connelly fan, by the way. Love his books. And having lived in L.A., I understand how L.A. is one of the characters in the books, really. So when we created a real crime series based on a real LAPD detective who was working on a cold case that he wanted to solve, and we created the series that I literally made this up, the investigative brand journalism, the first series of its kind, and we did get a lot of press and awards, and our social media campaign actually helped crowdsource some clues for the detective's cold case. But again, this was unprecedented, right? So we were walking a legal tightrope trying to make sure that we were doing ethical journalism, ethical advertising, all of those things. So it was a constant dance.
Yeah. We have time for two more questions. One I want to ask you about. It sounds like you were well prepared, but things can also pop up. So has data analytics ever surprised you or taught you something that you didn't really expect?
Yeah. So one of the things we found out by doing different types of articles and content pieces, infographics, interactives, videos, was that podcasts were really popular with our audience. And that surprised me at the time. This was a couple of years ago. I had assumed that podcasts had really run through their time, right? That they were popular years ago, but that, you know, now they'd kind of moved on and people were doing other things. The video was where it was at, and interactives were really cool. But I was actually wrong. Like, our data analysis showed us that our audience loved podcasts. So we had to shift our strategy, and we started doing more podcasts.
I'm seeing Paul out of the corner of my eye in the studio giving me a thumbs up. So, yeah, definitely. It's great to talk about the value of podcasts on a podcast. So you certainly know your audience here, even on this platform, right? You know, one thing, as we wrap things up this afternoon, one thing that I often hear among colleagues is that marketing is equally as much an art as it is a science. And trusting our creative gut and instincts is equally as important. And I think I speak for many who are probably tuning in today, that this is really interesting, but it's also a bit overwhelming. So we all know and recognize the C-suite understands data, but where do we as marketers and communicators go from here as we wrap things up here, and where can we start?
Sure. Well, one thing I hear a lot is from marketers and students is, do I need to learn to code? No, you don't. I really don't think you do. You know, like, maybe you needed to learn to code 15 years ago, but to use the tools now, they've become so user-friendly. Everything is so much more sophisticated than it was. I mean, just think about WordPress alone. Like, WordPress was founded in 2003. Over the last decade, it is so much easier to use than it ever was. So, and so much more sophisticated. You can do so much. You can plug in different things. Like, you don't need to learn to code. So I'm just debunk that myth right away. That's not to mean I don't think you need to learn new software, which I still think everybody's always learning, right? So I do think you need to keep learning and be open to what the data tells you, like the example of podcasts. I was surprised, but hey, give them what they want, right? So even if it surprises you, go with it and see where it leads. It might lead somewhere very interesting. And another thing I would say is ask different questions. So let's say you're not getting the answer that you want. Maybe you need to ask a different question. And maybe it's not the answer. Maybe it's not even the data. Maybe it's the query that you're inputting. And sometimes it's the questions that need to change and reimagined or be reframed. So change the query and see what you might find.
Mm-hmm. And this then, is guess, really been it. I'm sorry.
No, I'm just going to go back to the vampires again. And it's all, take it with a grain of salt, right? Facebook thinks I like vampires. I don't, right? So,
right.
You know, like Mark Twain is quoted to say, there are three kinds of lies, lies, damned lies, and statistics. So you never know, right?
Right. Well, and for the record, you like vampires, and it's also no lie that today's podcast was 100% insightful and certainly very interesting at that. Rachel, I want to thank you so much for your time today. This was a great show, and I appreciate you coming on and sharing your expertise.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And thank you for listening to WVU Marketing Communications today from all of us here at West Virginia University. Take care.
You've been listening to WVU Marketing Communications Today, brought to you live from West Virginia University, a bi-weekly program that sits at the intersection of data-driven decision-making and marketing practice, only on the Funnel Radio Network, for at-work listeners like you.